You really did quit teaching while you were still the New York State Teacher of the Year?
I quit teaching on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. I said I couldn't hurt kids any longer. That was July 15th, 1991, and almost immediately I expected to go and become a garlic farmer. I have a farm upstate that I'm turning into a retreat. I started to get calls. The first one was from the White House, and the second one was from NASA Goddard Space Center, and those calls have continued right up to the moment. I've traveled 2.5 million miles.
Oh my gosh.
10 countries, and all 40 are there 50 states.
Now, when you said you don't want to hurt children anymore, what did you mean by that?
The structure of compulsion schooling is set up to create incomplete people. It's the strangest kind of do-gooder phenomenon. That is to say, the people who did this weren't evil. They simply had a terminal disbelief in the potential of most people. They didn't want them to get in the way of efficient management. And so schools were set up to train people in, it's very odd, unproductive ways and habits and attitudes. The academic patina is window dressing.
You know, John, there's so much I want to talk with you about with schooling and what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and also get your take on comparing what we do to some other countries, because it also seems that when we bring in people from other nations, we're bringing in some high-powered thinkers, you know, these doctors and experts in science, and I'm just wondering if we have that kind of pool to pick from here, why we're pulling from there.
Well, we certainly have that kind of pool to pick from. It's simply not in the larger design for, let me call it, efficient management of the globe, not the United States. The people who gave us our schools had given up their belief in nation states 100 years ago. It's very, very clear from their own writing that they think it's a relic of barbarism, but it will have to be maintained until everyone is brought up to speed. Funny you said great thinkers. I just heard a Russian exchange student the other day, and I mean a junior high school exchange student, say in disbelief when she saw the math curriculum, she said, "Is this a joke?" Now, she wasn't editorializing. She was reacting to the difference between what she was familiar with as a perfectly ordinary student and what's offered here to the so-called gifted and talented. If I seem to take some amusement in this over the next 2 hours, I want to apologize to your readers. It's the only way I keep my sanity after dealing with this for 45 years, and then another 20 years as a student.
Did we do it all wrong as a country in terms of our educational system?
Well, depends on your own philosophy. From one point of view, and I mean the dominant point of view, not the majority point of view, but the dominant point of view, we've done it brilliantly well. That's why our economy is unstoppable, or has been at least, for 100 years. We've turned people into human resources, away from peoplehood into resourcehood, if I can invent some words there. And because they're so tractable and so manageable, we're able to achieve prodigies of production. The price for that, of course, is incomplete, mutilated lives. It's a radical extension of childhood, way, way beyond its historical parameters, so that people, as they prepare for their coffins, are in a large sense still in childhood.
John, as you look at education when you decided to become a teacher, I'm sure you had your favorite students. They had their favorite teacher, and most of them probably would have picked you. I had one with a science teacher back in sixth grade. His name was Mr. Strom. God bless his soul. I don't think he's alive now. And he got me interested in science, and, you know, I would build little rockets for science fairs and things like that. Then I had a teacher in high school who taught physics. His name was Mr. Kiefer. Loved him. I was going into the sciences, and I also wanted to go into broadcasting. So I was going in two different directions, and I tried to put them both together. But it's also the teacher, I think, and the parents that have a tremendous influence on us as kids.
Well, of course you're right. And of course, school as an occupation attracts a great many talented, dedicated, decent human beings. The ones that are memorable, I think, across the board are the ones that unknowingly sabotage the system. They break out of this narrow set of parameters that are imposed, and in doing so, usually they stick their neck out a country mile. Now, I don't want your readers to get the wrong impression. I'm not talking about people who wear beards and headbands. I'm talking about people who love ideas and love to spread the love of ideas. Those people are quite dangerous to the systematic schooling philosophy. Often they're tolerated because they set up a disguise over what's really going on. My daughter used to write me from MIT about people she loved, and I said, be very, very careful. Those people are tolerated in order to set up the misapprehension that if only we had more people like that, then schooling would be okay. The most prominent case of what I'm talking about in recent years was the Peruvian immigrant Jaime Escalante, who went to one of the 20 worst schools statistically in the state of California, and inside of 2 years, he had the top performing class in advanced calculus in the state of California. Of course, he was hated and despised by the school administration and by a great many of his fellow teachers, and eventually he was driven screaming from the building, but not before a movie was made that I really urge all your listeners to rent. It's called Stand and Deliver.